I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I am coming to you from quarantine. I hope you're all safe out there in America, wherever you are, listening to my voice and joining us this afternoon and every weekday at 3 p.m. here on America Out Loud. So, what do we do when we're in quarantine? This is a brand new paradigm for us in America. We're not used to having our rights curtailed like this. People telling us we can and cannot move about, that we have to stay in one place, that we have to limit our interaction with the rest of the world. It seems very uncomfortable. It seems a world out of place. Are we in the zombie apocalypse? Is that what's going on? Is this novel coronavirus as bad as we're being told it is? It seems, on one hand, that the information we're getting, it is extremely dangerous, and that we should be very, very careful that this is going on. And at the same time, we're hearing from other people that, well, as long as you're young and healthy, it's probably not going to bother you at all. It's going to pass right by you. Well, so far we have, maybe there are 2,000 people with coronavirus in America. And in the same time that we've been counting these coronavirus infections, there's probably been 7,000 or 8,000 people die from the regular influenza seasonal flu that comes around. So it seems a little disproportionate that we don't shut the world down for the regular flu, which kills between 30 and 80,000 people per year in our country. But this one that's killed, 2,000, and that, not that that's, there's never a good thing when people are dying from any kind of a disease. But when you look at that, you say to yourself, is it really because the potential is for millions of us to die? Or is there some other reason that this is taking place the way it is? I mean, if you're going to shut it down for 2,000 people get dying from this virus, why would we not shut the country down every year during flu season when we lose 30 to 80,000 people? So there must be something to that. And I'm not a virologist. I am not a phlebotomist. I'm not any medical kind of a person, though I have played a TV doctor. I'm only kidding. The reality here is that because this paradigm is so new to us, what is it we should be doing? My daughter attends college in New York City, and she wanted to stay there. The college was willing to stay open and let any of the students stay in their dorm, even though they decided to shut down classes. They weren't going to have live on-campus classes. They were going to do it all through the internet, web classes and stuff like that. My son in high school, they shut down the school initially, they said, for 2 weeks. And now we're hearing that it's probably going to be through the end of the school year, which here in Jersey is really into June. They get done like June 20th of every year. So this really has been a huge disruption. People are not working, and if your company doesn't have enough cash reserves to keep paying you without doing your work, and you might have the kind of work that you can't do from home. I'm lucky. I can do my teaching and training from home. The internet is an amazing thing. As long as the electricity stays on, I can continue to teach and train. I can run webinar classes. I can do video training. So my livelihood is going to continue, but not everyone is in that position. There's lots of people that have been put out of commission because of this. I think of some of the unsung heroes here in this crisis we're going on is the food workers, people in food stores. One of the guys that's come on the neighborhood here with us is Yankee Doodle Keith. He's in Massachusetts, and he works in a food store up there. And he's sending me texts, and he's letting me know. Normally, he works, 7 hours a day, maybe a couple of hours overtime here and there. He has worked nonstop, minimum 16 hours every single day, 7 days a week, just to keep everything going. These are the unsung heroes of this crisis. My buddy Pat Scott, he's a manager of a big store, one of the big chains, food stores, and he is going crazy with trying to keep the food in stock and making sure that the supply line stays open. And then you have people come in and buy 70 gallons of milk. They take everything of milk out of the cabinet there, the refrigerator box, and then they're going to take it all. They're going to take every bit of toilet paper or whatever is in the store. So this is new to us, like I said, to be told what to do like this, to be curtailed in our activities. But at the same time, we're seeing the best and the worst of humanity. When you see elderly people in the stores and they don't have the ability to wrestle over top of everyone and grab 9 packages of toilet paper and go out the door with it, but you see some guy with double carts and he fills it to the top with all the toilet paper or the all the milk or all the meat. There was one story, guy came up and the butcher had put out 50 packages of chopped meat, and this guy intimidated everybody around him and loaded up his cart with all 50 packages of the chopped meat. Now, that's the worst of us. You know, these are the kind of things that happen in the storybooks, you know, the dystopian stories of what they do. And at the same time, there's been stories of people who have made sure that they wrestled some packages of toilet paper and they gave them to the elderly person standing in line. You know, they did without on this particular trip to make sure that person did it. I know my buddy Pat's store, they've designated 6 a.m. till 8 a.m. only people 60 years and older can go into the store so that they can shop, they can get what they need without being hustled out of the way by some of the less decent elements sometimes in our society. And it's funny because this really tracks to everybody. There's no specific person or group who's involved in any of this. These are people just panicking. And hey, you know what? Survival of the fittest is 50 packs of meat. That's 50 packs of meat for my family. So I'm going to take all 50 packs of meat and throw them in my cart, and then I'm going to load them up. Where the hell they're going to keep 50 packs of meat, I don't know. They must have big freezers. But the point is that you take 50, and then there's, you know, I don't know, maybe you need 5. Maybe you take 6. I don't know, because you might be down for 2 weeks and you want to eat a lot of chopped meat. I don't know. But do you take 50? Do you take 50 and then 12, 13 other people can't get any? You know, what's that all about? This is what leads to people doing desperate things. You know, I mentioned once before around here during Superstorm Sandy, when it first hit, everybody was very friendly to each other. People were sharing. They were sharing their food. They were sharing their water. They, you know, there was not really a lockdown, but they wanted you to stay in your home, shelter in place, because the roads were dangerous, and if you had to go out for medicine or gasoline or whatever, because generators were running. But after a week or so, people stopped sharing because now the food was running low. The stores were wiped out. You know, food stores were absolutely knocked off their hinges. There were no stores. So the getting supplies was difficult. So the sharing kind of stopped after a week, and then we had the power continue out for more than a week. And at that point, the gasoline was running short, and people were fighting, even shooting each other in gasoline lines to get gas. So you can imagine how quickly this whole thing might go over if this is a prolonged type of a problem. So one of the things as law enforcement that comes to my mind immediately is that if this virus is as bad as they're saying it is, and now, you know, the stories are changing, because, and I'm not saying it's conspiracy related, what I'm saying is that as the virus continues to run through the population, we're going to see differences. It mutates. You know, this was an animal virus that only attacked animals, and somehow it jumped over, it mutated, and now it is infecting human beings. So this virus could mutate yet again, and it could change its method of delivery. You know, right now it's mucosal. It has to go into the, you know, the mucus and the eyes and stuff to transmit from one person to another. It started out from animal to human that way. Now it's human to human that way. That, you know, your spittle, your coughing, when you're sneezing, all those drops have the virus in it. And if that gets on someone else, it can go to that. Can you imagine if this thing transmitted itself around by mutating again, and now it was transdermal? That all it had to do was float around in the air and land on your skin, and it could get into your skin. So this is evolving. So I think the changing stories is that you just have so many different medical people and scientific people working on this thing, trying to understand it, trying to figure out how to fight it, what they can do about it, that the information is changing day to day. And initially, what did we all hear? If you're 60 and older, there's a very good chance that if you get this, you may have a health problem. Even though only 10% of those people would die, it was much higher. The rest of the population, pretty much safe. You might have bad, severe flu indications and symptoms, but it's not really going to hurt you. And younger people, you may have it and not even know you have it, and it'll pass right through you, and next thing you know, you've already had it. But now that's changing. Now we're seeing, you know, people that maybe they are compromised in some other healthcare way, health issues. In younger years, less than 60, are dying from this. And again, I think the big thing that we're hearing consistently is that if you have a compromised immune system, if you have other healthcare problems, and you're younger, you may very well be susceptible to the worst that this virus can give you. But the fact that at this point, the number of deaths is so much less than the normal regular flu is what's confounding. Like I said, we don't shut the whole world down for the regular flu, and that kills lots and lots of people every year. So maybe there's something more to this. So we're all doing the right thing, right? We're all staying off the street as best we can. We're social distancing ourselves and all of that. So what I did want to offer out there is I heard one of the best explanations from a friend of mine who is a nurse in a big hospital. And he had gotten this from a doctor of, I don't know if he's an epidemiologist or a microbiologist. I'm not sure where the source came from, but he was a medical source. And they had passed this on to the nursing staff to understand why this particular virus is so dangerous and what the potential for danger is, because we really don't know, you know, about it. So let me explain that. And again, I'm doing the best I can with this. So there are viruses out there that attack humans, and our systems are prepared for those viruses. So they are transmitted from person to person, whether it's the standard flu, measles virus, whatever other viruses are out there that we can all get. But our human bodies can react to that virus because it's the way the virus is set up, it's for our system. It attacks our system, therefore our system can fight back. This particular coronavirus, COVID-19, is actually an animal virus. It's set up to recognize and attack animals. It goes from animal to animal, and the virus isn't able to penetrate the human system because just of the way it's set up. So some things are only for animals, some things are only for human. Well, what happened with the COVID-19 is that this virus was, bats and those kind of animals would get this and pass it around amongst their own community. And then this thing mutated, as viruses often do. They're alive, and they mutate. And it mutated in its ability to go animal to animal, and now from animal to human. And the initial thought is that in that mutation, it was now able to attack the human physiological system, and it was transmitted directly from an animal to a human, patient zero. And there's a lot of thought that this was in Wuhan. They have some food markets where they eat some exotic foods that they don't necessarily eat here in America. Apparently they eat bats, they eat rats, they eat snakes, things that we don't necessarily eat here in America. And it could sound very strange to us, but you know, every culture is different. Every culture has different needs for food. And you got 1 billion people in China. They don't have a huge cattle industry. So I suppose this all develops where they need meat products, and they found other animals to eat. They eat dogs. We know that. There's dogs eaten over there. So that's not something we do here, but it's a meat source. You know, it's a strange meat source to us. So this virus that went from animal to animal, bat to bat, so to speak, it mutated, and now it went from a bat to a human eating the bat. Now the human got sick. Now that virus, once it was able to get into the human system, it could then be transmitted from human to human, and it had an in from its mutation into the human system, from human to human. Now we start passing it around, and our bodies have no history with this virus. There is no mechanism in place to prepare our bodies to fight this particular virus. We have no history with it, and there's no inoculation. You know, you can get the flu shot, the regular human flu shot, right? Influenza shot, and that helps your body build an immunity to a human virus. But this, there is no shot. We don't develop shots for humans with animal diseases, because we don't get the animal diseases. But this mutated, and now it was able to attack a human, from human to human, and now we're passing it around, and our bodies are not prepared for it, and our medical community is not prepared for it. So that's why it's spreading around so quickly. Whether it mutates again, obviously they say there's two strains of it now. It has already mutated again, and it is changing. So as this changes and develops in its new host, like all living things, it will evolve, and it changes within the human body now, and we're seeing that it could go in many directions. You know, it attacks the lung. This particular virus goes after the lungs, which causes so much problem. So people with COPD, people with pneumonia history, people that have weakened immune systems can't fight this off. And when it attacks the lung, it creates the pneumonia. All right, so when you attack the lung and the lung can't function properly, it fills with fluids. You get that's where the pneumonia comes from. All right, so that's how I understand this. So that's why we were not prepared for this particular virus, and that's why the scientific community, the medical community, is racing right now to try and find ways to create some kind of a medication, a vaccination, so that we can begin to fight this back. I'm sure this is in the history of mankind, not the first time there's been a jump from one to the other, and I'm sure it will not be the last. The questions that come up are, was this done purposely? Was this created in a military chemical warfare, biological warfare unit in China, and it stuck out, you know, like in all the horror books that you read, the dystopian stories, there was this virus that they created to fight their enemy, and somebody dropped a test tube and it got out, got everybody sick. There is a potential for that. We'd have to be foolish to think that people are not still working on those kind of things. And I don't mean just the Chinese. I think pretty much any government out there that's looking for some power weapon is probably still looking at biological weapons. We'd be foolish to think that they weren't. So this is not necessarily the last thing like that we could see. It's a potential that it's one of many that this one got out. So where do we go from here? All right, where do we go from here? We are in lockdown here. I had to go to the city, like I told you, to get my daughter, and it was eerie. If you've ever been to New York City, you know it is a hustling, bustling, thriving place, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. There's always people out on the street. There's always crowds. There's always thousands of people everywhere, all hours of the day and night. It's an energy, really, place. I really do like New York City. But we were there in, I don't know, about 11 o'clock in the morning, and it was quiet as could be. We went in through the Holland Tunnel from New Jersey into New York City, and it was as quiet as you could imagine. There was only a few cars going in, a few cars coming out. There was hardly any people on the street. You had the occasional jogger. There was cops walking around, but everybody you saw on the street had masks. It was eerie. It was eerie, the quiet that we experienced in the city, picking her up. So we stopped at her university. We ran in, grabbed her stuff as quick as we could. We were thankful there was nobody on the elevator with us, just her and I. We got her stuff out of there. We wore rubber gloves. We got to the car. We covered ourselves in disinfectant, and we drove the heck out of there as fast as we could, which took no time at all. Again, no traffic coming or going from the city. Very, very strange. So is that a portent for the future? Is that where we're going here with this? How long we'll be locked down? We don't know. Nobody knows how long we're going to be locked down here. It could be weeks until the virus starts to wane or they come up with a vaccination, or it could be months at the worst end. You know, months would really, really be a big problem for all of us, because your money starts to run out, your job is closed down, the government can't pay for everything forever. It is a potentially scary deal. What we need to know is why. Why is this particular one so different than the regular flu? Is it that potentially dangerous? Well, you know what? Only time is going to tell. As we go through this and we find out, either it peaks and then begins to die back, and viruses die off usually in the warmer weather, we'll find out if this is something that's going to stay with us for a very long time and change our lives, or if this is something that's going to pass through, created a big ripple in the pond, and hopefully will teach us what we need to do in the future. So with those kind of thoughts on our head, let's just all say a little prayer for our families, spend this time in a good way together, and hope for the best, everybody. We'll be back in a minute here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner? feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, HealthyCell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit HealthyCell.com/sleep. That's Healthy, HealthyCell.com/sleep.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we have some fellas in the neighborhood here today, all of us from quarantine. We have with us today rock and roll race car Jack Patterson. Jack, how are you?
Joe, hey, it's kind of sort of great to be here in a very remote, distant sort of way.
Yes, it is kind of strange, right? Also with it is, William Dallas, our man of faith. Bill, how are you?
I'm fine, Joe. I agree with Jack. It is kind of weird not being able to see each other, but hey, I'm all for it.
Excellent. And also with us today, as special guest here in the neighborhood, is we have our lawyer of record. We have Joe Pangaro Jr. Joe, how are you?
Glad to be here as always, Dad. I listen to the neighborhood segments, from my house and in my car. Very excited to be part of one. So this is a lot of fun.
Yes, it's like sitting around a campfire with a bunch of fellas, except right now there's some evil, horrible bug flying around that's going to try and kill us all. So we have to do it kind of remotely like this. So I guess what we're going to talk about today is pretty obvious, is this lockdown, the coronavirus that's really tearing the country apart economically. Right now we're in probably day 3 or 4 of lockdown. Now, of course, it's not a strict lockdown, there's no cops riding around arresting people if you go out, but there is the idea we're supposed to stay home and only go out for emergency things. So,
Joe, if I may.
Sure.
Just a short prayer to get us going and to have the Lord bless our meeting.
That would be wonderful. Go right ahead.
All right. Dear Lord, you know all that we're dealing with. You know that there are things happening that are beyond our control. Please, Lord, help us to accept what we cannot change. Help us to turn our worry time to prayer time. Please, Lord, help us so these things don't steal our joy. Help us to keep our eyes fixed on you. We lay our stress at your feet. We give you our disappointments. We give you all our frustrations, our sadness, and just ask for your peace. Just a bit of your serenity to surround us in these times of uncertainty. May your will be done, Lord Jesus. And it is in your name that we pray, the name that is above all names, that of the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen, brother. All right, so let's see, just as it's going, first of all, does everybody have enough toilet paper where you are?
I do.
I am all set.
Joe, things are good.
Yeah, that was more of an adventure than I expected, to be honest. They are now selling toilet paper, not on Amazon, not on Walmart.com, but on eBay for about $35 a roll. So I had to go, almost felt like I was on the dark web, searching for stores that still had toilet paper, and there was a Walmart in Deptford, New Jersey. I had to get up bright and early, drive there, and they were actually rationing their toilet paper, believe it or not. There was a woman walking through the lines, pulling out products from people's carts if they had too much. And so I had two packages of TP, and I was scolded in front of everyone. I was only allowed to get one, but I think that we will survive.
That's fantastic. You know, I saw a guy the other day on social media. He seems some kind of a mathematical genius. He broke down the standard roll of toilet paper into about 1,200 individual little squares. And then he tried to do a survey, I guess, of himself and his family, how many squares they used per poop. And then he figured out how many poops per roll. And then you could figure out by how many rolls you have how long your toilet paper would last. Very scientific.
There's no way I could get along with that guy. I'll just say off the bat, if he's in my neighborhood, I hope I don't find out. That's one of those guys you could not have a beer with. That is way too weird and way too in-depth to calculate.
Absolutely. I figure, you know, a roll lasts about 24 hours. You know, that's how it works out out there in Chasing Justice Land. You may not be as full of it as we are here. Get it? See what I'm saying? My little joke there. On a serious note, you know, this whole lockdown thing is different experience for us as Americans. This is going to be one of those watershed moments that we're all going to look back on, because I do believe we will. This will clear up as time goes by. But there is this component to our lives now where we were in lockdown and the world shut down and businesses are going to have a hard time coming back. So Rock and Roll Race Car Jack there, are you still working or are you guys shut down? Or are you essential business?
Myself, my son and my daughter are all working at the present time. We don't know for how long. But yeah, so far we're still employed.
Okay, that's good. How about you, Bill?
I'm fortunate to be able to work from home. So, you know, I normally visit clients on a day-to-day basis. I have a lot of set appointments that I do. But in this environment now that we're in, unfortunately, I work from home and I call customers on the phone. And I can actually email them and talk on video conferencing. So, again, I'm fortunate and blessed in that way.
All right. And, Joe, I know you're working from home.
Yeah, all a lawyer really needs is Microsoft Word and, you know, access to the internet for research. And we can kind of work anywhere. I do feel bad for a lot of our a lot of our staff and support people. You know, my firm has updated their policies to extend additional amounts of PTO to everyone so that they can stay home and be safe during this crisis. But it just makes me very aware of a lot of firms and a lot of businesses that aren't in a position to do that. You know, I think the biggest restaurant in our neighborhood, after 2 or 3 days of shutdown, was already on the brink. We ordered out from them. I picked it up, and the owner of the store, she ran it out, you know, crying, literally crying when she brought out the food. She said, "It's 16 years in business, and this is going to drive us under." You know, so I'm very, very aware of kind of at least how this is impacting the businesses in my little Main Street. You know, you're seeing everything's closed, then you're going to start seeing, you know, for rent and for purchase signs coming up soon, because I just don't think anyone's going to be able to handle 2, 3, 4 weeks of complete shutdown.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Restaurants run on such small margins. Now, I know you put something out on social media. Hey, if you really like your local restaurant, whatever, go buy gift cards. And then when we come back to business, you can go cash them in and use them. But at least now they would have the cash. And I saw that happening at a restaurant in my area that I really liked the guy. And he was very grateful. And apparently he sold a couple thousands of dollars worth of gift cards. People came out to support him. So that's one way you can support your local businesses. It's just another strange thing that we're going to see after this is over. It seems like almost a moment of reflection, right? I wrote an article on the AmericaOutloud.com platform. It's up there. It's called "Coronavirus: Is a Chastisement from God or Is It a Wake-Up Call?" So really, when you look at this, this is shutting us all down. It's funny that it's happening during this time of Lent, you know, in the Christian faith. You know, Lent is a time for everyone to slow down, use less of things, have less of things, so you appreciate your relationship with God. You work on that kind of a thing. But this is really taking everything away from everyone. I find that interesting. Bill, you have anything to say on that point?
Well, I've said so many times that our country has lost their moral compass and that we need to reset it, actually. But you know what? We couldn't do it. So God did it. God is helping us to set our moral compass. He's making us do without things. He's helping us to, as a family, to get closer together. Now we're spending more time at home with family, finding things that we just neglected before, like talking to each other. That's a big deal, you know, watching programs together, playing games together. My daughter has got two kids, and, you know, they sat out on their deck the other night, just having the kids running around, and my daughter and Bob, they were talking. You know, it's a hard thing when you're so busy running around doing your job, being a mom, being a dad, and sometimes we neglect the things that are the most important to us, and that's our family.
Yep, you're right. And it's interesting because I heard, you know, people were saying some good advice. If you have to be home, and I'm working from home, my company did the same thing. We decided, you know, the right thing to do is to keep everybody home and work from home. Now, I can work from home. I create programs. I teach. We're going to be doing a lot of webinars. We're going to be doing video training. So I can do that. But this whole idea of make the most of your time, it was interesting. I went out into my yard, and I like working in the yard and, you know, making my yard nice and this and that. But I had some wood sitting around, some plywood sitting around for a long time that I said to myself, you know, someday I'm going to build a birdhouse out of that. And, you know, that someday just never comes when you're a busy person and you're running around. I thought I would never be able to do that. So the other day I went out and I took my saw and my tools and I created a beautiful birdhouse. And I painted it. I put a nice roof on it. And I took it and hooked it up onto the fence post so that the birds could get to it. And it was actually very, very nice thing to do. I felt like I made some good use out of this particular time that we have here slow. And your point about being with family is also very good, Billy, because we have my daughter home from college. You know, college was cut short. They're all doing things online. We had to go get her out of New York City, which was a harrowing experience enough. And my son, Jack, who's in high school, they shut down his high school. So he's doing everything on that kind of a situation where he's home, you know, and they're doing homeschool stuff, but they can't really hang out with their friends. They're supposed to stay away from each other, which is a really kind of important thing for them to do, you know. I don't know. It's just a weird kind of a world. So make sure you make the best use out of the time. Joe, do you find you're spending more time with people? You're spending more time with the family? I mean, I know you just had a beautiful baby, and you and your wife are really close with that baby, but, you know, anything different for you?
Actually, honestly, not for me, because my work can continue in the exact same way at home as it does in the office. And so I've made the family a priority since the baby was born, especially to kind of come home in a reasonable time. The only difference for me really has been, you know, about a 45-minute chop off of transportation time in both directions. But, you know, I think I'm on the very fortunate side of I'm not seeing much of a difference, but that's also because I'm able to keep doing my entire job, whereas a lot of my friends are winding up struggling with that. Now, a nice benefit is they get to spend time with their family, but a tough part is, where's the next paycheck coming from? And I just look at it as, you know, I'm sad that I'm not able to spend more time with people, but I'm very fortunate that my job is not being suspended or put on a hiatus in any way. So for me, there's not been much of a change.
Right. And I think that's an important thing to look at, because not everyone is going to be so lucky as to, you know, ride this out without cash. So Rock and Roll Jack, you know, Joe is talking about, you know, if restaurants shut down, if they have to be shut down for 3 or 4 weeks, that could be a problem. You know, if, you know, we're all working, you said you were working still, and that's great. If you had to go down, you know, how long can any of us hang out without a paycheck? I mean, nobody's millionaires here. We don't have banks full of cash, and you could personally wipe out your savings, I suppose, right?
Of course. I mean, the problems that everybody seems to be facing out there right now is the overloading of the unemployment system. Me personally, this goes to our friend Jim, who isn't with us today, but I sure wish he was, because I feel that there's been some major infringements made upon the Constitution. The coronavirus does not cancel out our Constitution. I don't mind being asked to do certain things to stop the spread of this disease. But when I have governors coming on TV and telling me that I have to, that there'll be police enforcement, things such as this, I have a right and I have freedom and I have the freedom to travel. And that should not be impinged in any way. As far as the restaurants are concerned, sure. I mean, I agree. We have to stay away from each other for the most part. But if people wish to go somewhere and eat, I really don't see that as an issue, as long as the restaurateur and the people sitting down to eat are okay with it. It's a personal choice, and I think we can't overlook our personal choices, even in this grave time.
Well, I think that's a whole nother conversation, Jack. I think you're right. You know, what gives them, I've heard this, people ask this on social media, and actually, what gives the governor the right to tell us we can't go out on the street and we can't meet and all that other stuff? And I think it's a 50-50 kind of a thing. The governor, just like any leader, any political leader, has certain powers that they can invoke during emergencies. You know, during Superstorm Sandy, they would come around and tell us, you know, you can't be on the road. They made people on some of these barrier islands. Even during hurricanes, they'll come around and it's a mandatory evacuation. If you don't leave, they can arrest you and take you out. It's there for public safety. At the same time, it is absolutely potentially a violation of our rights. And the redress you have to that actually is you could, if they arrested you for being out when they tell you you can't go out, you would have to go through the court system and see if that would be declared as an unconstitutional action that the governor took. But that's 3 years down the road in court and a couple $100,000. And most people don't have that to just, let that fly away. So I don't know where we're going with all of this. Right now, we're in the early stages of this. I'm hoping that it passes quickly. We're hearing lots of different stories from the president, from different governors, from people who, you know, unfortunately are wielding this as a political weapon also in this election year, that this could go on for months and months and months, which is really disheartening because the country cannot survive in lockdown for months and months and months, even with a big infusion of cash from the government to everybody, because we'll all end up having to pay that back at some point. There's no way you get that money for free. So I think it was great that Bill gave us a prayer to start this off. And I hope everyone out there in Chasing Justice Land is doing well. Heed the advice of the people that are our leadership, telling us to stay away from each other for the time being, spend time with your families, build a birdhouse, do something that you've been meaning to get around to, clean out a closet, maybe just pray a little bit more. But I am hoping that when we come out of this, we all come out of this better, and that our country moves forward. It gives us a minute to slow down, to take a deep breath and say, hey, what are we doing? Where are we going? And why are we doing it like this? So I want to thank everybody for stopping by today in the neighborhood. And we'll be back in a minute here on Chasing Justice.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangara. I'm here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. You know, recently I joined a group called the ORCS, Old Retired Cops. It was started by a friend of mine, Larry Milon. He's a retired chief of police, and he started this group for retired guys and girls from law enforcement. And we started out I guess the first day he started it, probably like 30 people joined, and then 75. Next thing you know, there's 200. There's well over several thousand now. So if you go to Facebook and you're a retired cop, federal, state, local, doesn't matter, look for the old retired cops and you request to join. And then you got to tell them, you know, where you worked, how many years you worked, because, you know, they really only want cops in there. And you get approved, and then you can show pictures of when you were a cop, talk about old cop stories. It's really very interesting stuff. So you can go and do that. You know, one of the things that I've got working on here, and I want to send a shout out to my brother here, Lieutenant Randy Sutton, who is a tremendous individual. His group, the Wounded Blue, is fantastic. If you can donate, you know, I think we're going to make that our group that we deal with here. Randy, I wanted to thank him very much. Recently, I've written one of my first training manual books that will be coming out on Loose Leaf Law, which is our publisher, and it's called The Art of Interview, and it's all about how to interview people. So this book is for police officers, corrections officers, private investigators, school investigators, anybody that has to interview anybody can learn the best way to do this, the psychological underpinnings of an interview, how to use that in your favor, and how to get confessions and obtain, you know, statements from people that are important, incriminating, that kind of a thing. So I wrote this book, The Art of Interview, and I asked Randy, who I respect very much, to review it. And I am very pleased to hear back from him, where he gave me a glowing review. So for all my friends out there, you should be looking for that. I will certainly let everybody know when they can go get that. The Art of Interview from Loose Leaf Law. Probably, I'm thinking May or June that should pop out. My company, True Security Design, is also going to be creating webinars for training in this time when everybody's kind of locked down. We're going to be doing free and, you know, for pay. So we're going to have all different kinds, but we're looking to have people pop on. So go take a look at truesecuritydesign.com, and you'll see the courses and stuff there. And then slowly you're going to start to see the pop-ups are going to come in when the webinar is available, the free ones and the per-pay ones. And it'd be great to have everybody there. The only other thing I'm going to ask, if you listen to our Chasing Justice show here and you feel like part of the family and you'd want to be more of a family member, you can certainly reach out to us on Twitter at Pangaro Global, at Pangaro Global. So go on there and give us a like, and we will certainly follow you back and all that kind of stuff. All right, so we're in this weird time. And, you know, I don't want everything to be all about, you know, this apocalypse that we're going through here. But it's hard to get away from it. This is so profound to us. You know, what's it going to do to this economy and how is it being politicized? Well, we see already that Joe Biden, you know, God bless him. I think he's past his prime. I think he's certainly not the best person to be president of the United States. But he's coming out and, you know, blaming everything inappropriately on President Trump for this virus, as though Trump sat in a lab somewhere and created this virus to cause all this problem for us. Really a terrible thing to do is to politicize this. I got to tell you, you know, when you look at what the president has done, he has been calm. He's been trying to be a good leader in all of this. He has mobilized things like only a businessman can. When he mobilized the business community, he mobilized his political enemies. He's trying to get all of this together as quickly as possible. But his political enemies will attack him. We see that when he did the travel ban from China all the way back in January. They attacked him as, that's racist, you can't shut down China. When he says it's the Chinese virus or the Wuhan virus, they say, that's racist, you can't call it that. I don't know. I think that should not even be something we discuss, because we should totally write that nonsense off. Because don't we have the Spanish flu? Didn't we call it that? Wasn't there the Hong Kong flu? Was that racist also? We can't tag that label of racist on everything as a weapon to attack somebody just because you don't like what they have to say. You know, it loses its veracity. You know, racism is a horrible and terrible thing. And when you call everything racist as a way to gain political points, you take away from the real horror of racism where it does exist. So by saying that it's racist and talking about that in a briefing where the man is telling you what's going on with the medical situation, how we're trying to gear up to fight this thing, what's going on, and answer questions, and have these inane reporters asking stupid questions like, don't you think it's racist to call it the Chinese virus? You know, these people are, they're buffoons. And they don't do any of us a service. Instead, they should be looking and seeing what's actually going on and provide the information. Surprisingly, I have to say that Governor Mario Cuomo, who I am not a fan of politically at all, I find his policies to be terrible, horrible, nothing that I would support. He has done a great job leading New York State through this crisis. He has been more than reasonable. He has worked with President Trump, and he has given Trump great accolades, just like Newsom in California, another left-wing nut that I couldn't say anything positive about his politics. But he has been forthcoming and saying how much President Trump has helped him, is helping California. It's wonderful to see. Now, this could certainly be a result of the fact that this is a very serious situation. And sometimes level-headed people, no matter what their beliefs are, can realize that there's a certain moment that you do not make things political, that there's a danger to that. You know, we can fight later on, we can call each other names later, but today we have to deal with this thing head on, whatever the problem is. And I find that to be really a good thing, and I was happy to see how well Andrew Cuomo did. And I'll give anybody accolades when they do something well, regardless of whether I think their policies are correct or not. What he's doing right now in New York State, he's leading very, very well, which is interesting because now you're seeing people jump up and down and go, hey, wait a minute, President Andrew Cuomo, maybe we should drag him in instead of Joe Biden when it comes time to the convention and run Andrew Cuomo for president, which is interesting. Because we still do have a major election coming up this year, probably one of the most important elections. And we've said that for the past 10 election cycles. But I think it's true because each time we come up to this election season, especially in the last couple, we realize we're on the precipice of losing our country as we know it. And depending on who wins the election, we can either hang on a little bit longer or we can move forward. So with the election of President Trump, the choice was after 8 years of Obama and his socialist left-wing policies, destroying our economy, destroying the country. If we had had Hillary Clinton, we would have been in a very, very poor position today, economically, militarily. It would have been terrible. So Donald Trump was a savior there. And I don't say that in a religious form, but I say he's a savior to the country to maintain America as it always has been. This next election, if we do not receive a second election of Donald Trump and we see someone from the left take over, we are going to see a return to the Obama era. There's just no way around it. They've already told us they're going to tax us at very high rates. They're going to defund the military. They are going to change the paradigm of America, and that's not in our best interest. So this is the most important election coming up, and I know our friends on the left are really quietly frantic that Joe Biden is the guy. And I've given you my reasoning for that. It's pretty clear. For years and years, the right has said that those on the left are socialists and communists, and they've always denied it, though they always loved the Soviet Union. They love the Castros. They love the Nicaraguans, Daniel Ortega and all the Sandinistas. They love all the left-wing communist socialist governments, but they denied that they were socialist or communist themselves. It would be very difficult for them to maintain that position should their standard bearer be Bernie Sanders, the socialist communist. So that is why there was such a panic. That was why there was an immediate power collapse with all the other candidates jumping out and endorsing Joe Biden, so that they would rather lose, I think, with Joe Biden as their head than to lose with Bernie as their standard bearer, because they could never deny that position ever again, that they were socialist communists. So very interesting if they were to drag in this Andrew Cuomo. I think he would be beatable because his policies and his previous statements are really left wing, and they're not mainstream America at all. He wouldn't do anything to increase jobs. He would be just another left wing politician that would regulate everybody and drive the economy into the ground. Look what he's doing in New York. You know, no fracking. He does not want fracking in New York, even though that is energy independence. And isn't it kind of instructive during this coronavirus thing that we see how important that America first kind of an attitude is, you know, not the BS racist one that they try and tell you it is, but really the idea that America should take care of its own, create its own products here in America so that anything we need, we create on our own. We don't have to go somewhere else to get it. Currently, most of our medications are manufactured in China. And now China has said they may decide to not send us that medication. So what does that tell us? Maybe we foolishly got involved in sending all of our manufacturing out of our country. So maybe we have to find ways to bring it back, you know, like energy independence. So we're not so concerned about the Middle East and what goes on there. We could stay out of wars. We could stay out of conflicts because we have our own energy here in America. So I think the same thing is true with our manufacturing line. We have to make sure that we bring back as many jobs as we can, as much industry as we can to America and get it out of China. This is the biggest wake-up call we could possibly have had. Which reminds me, if you go to the AmericaOutloud.com platform and you look for my most recent column that I wrote there, it's called Coronavirus. Is it a chastisement from God or is it a wake-up call? And I kind of try and lay this out because it kind of really settles a lot of the arguments we've been having, inanities in our country where it is foolish arguments back and forth. Again, with the racist term being thrown around every time somebody wants to do something, like, you know, close the borders. There's a real good reason we should close the borders. You notice with this coronavirus, one of the first things all these governments are doing are closing their borders to protect their people. Well, that's kind of the whole idea. It's not about hating anyone. It's not about being racist. It's about you got to protect your country. You got to protect your interests. And you do that with a border. So if we haven't seen now the importance of a closed border, I don't know how we will ever get a louder wake-up call. If this was a chastisement from God, it would be extremely painful. You know, that's not something to play around with. Through the history of time, if you're a religious person, you know God has chastised his people for their behavior. And if this is a chastisement, it's only going to get tougher because, you know, he sends this message for you to, hey, you're not doing the right thing, and I want to kind of throw this at you so you kind of step back and rethink what you're doing. We are kind of getting that. This is kind of a chastisement light, I think you could call it. But I think it's really the biggest thing is a wake-up call. So go to the AmericaOutloud.com platform, look up Chasing Justice, Lieutenant Joe, and read that article. I think you'll really like it. It was written passionately. You know, sometimes I write and I really think it out and I want to make sure that I get certain points out. This was written very passionately when I saw the realities of what's going on here. You know, the fact that our manufacturing is not our manufacturing. The fact that our medicine is not in our country, that they could shut us down. Just like the oil people could shut us down for all them years, now our manufacturing can be shut down. Our very medicines we need to stay alive can be shut down. All right? The next thing we need to look at. Look at these young people on spring break down in Florida. Now, spring break is a ritual. It is a rite of passage for many, many college students. And they go down there. They have a crazy good time. Lots of fun, right? Whether you agree with their activities or not, they go down, they have a great time. Millions and millions and millions of dollars are spent by these kids at all these beach places across the south of America. Well, now we're supposed to be maintaining our distance from each other so we don't spread this virus. And you've still got thousands and thousands and thousands of these kids down there swapping spit, dancing, gyrating all over the place, drinking. Is it going to be any surprise when we find out the stories are already coming out that some of these kids are coming back with coronavirus? that it's going to spread through that population very quickly. These young people, they may not be affected terribly, you know, just like the experts are telling us. If you're young and healthy, it will pass you for the most part. You'll feel flu-like symptoms and then you'll move on. The danger is that they're going to bring all of that back to our communities. They're going to bring that back to our elderly parents, aunts, uncles, cousins, neighbors. They're going to bring all that stuff back to their family members, you know, people that do have health problems. So what are they thinking? You know, the stories in the news, you see them and they say, oh, these kids, they showed a video of talking to these kids and they're like, well, man, we've been waiting for a long time for spring break. We're not letting no corona slow us down. You know, sure. You know, I get that you want to have your good time party, but you're really not thinking beyond yourself. And you have created a situation now where this virus could now come back and attack people even harder. So I don't know where we're going with all of this. It's been an interesting couple of weeks, and I think the next couple of weeks are only going to be more interesting. So if you want to reach out at Pangaro Global, tweet to me. Let me hear what you're doing in your neck of the woods, and maybe I'll put you on here. I'm looking to see if I can get some people on here from the food industry. You know, I would like to get, you know, Yankee Doodle Keith on here to talk about what he's going through. But unfortunately, he's working day and night, so I can't really find a lot of time to yank him out of the aisle, so to speak, and get him on the radio here. But I'm trying. I have some calls out to some other people. So maybe in the next week or so, we'll see if we can get some of them in here to talk to us about their experiences, what it's like in the store. Hear about the food chain. You know, and the supply chain. Is everything really good? Is it long-term? I mean, where did all the food go? They make tons and tons of this stuff, and suddenly the shelves are empty. You think they would restock them every single day just to make that extra money, but that doesn't seem to be the case, right? You go in, things are empty for a couple days at a time. Where are these manufacturers? I would put on triple shifts. Oh, that's right. A lot of businesses are not essential. They're being shut down. Is that going to affect our chain, our food chain, our supply chain? Down the road if things don't pick up sooner rather than later. So, again, I wish everybody luck out there. I want you to be safe, be healthy, and be in touch. Remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice. We'll talk to you soon.